This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program. Welcome to Faith in Action. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Hello, great to be with you again.
And we've got two guests today, one in studio and one by phone, and it's going to be an interesting program. One thing, you know, at this time we quite often mention different ways you can support Catholic Radio, and one that we haven't mentioned for a while is donating cars.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to only be cars, especially at this time of the year.
Boats.
Boats, motorcycles, RVs, things that you just didn't use as much as you thought you were going to use. Well, anything with a title, you can donate to Catholic Radio. We will sell it or salvage it. It doesn't have to run. We'll send someone out to tow it away if that's what it takes, or we'll send a driver out to pick it up, however it works for you. And then we'll sell it or salvage it, and the money will go to keep Catholic Radio on the air. So if you have a vehicle or an item like that, go to our website, catholicradioindy.org. There's a click on, there's a vehicle, donate your vehicle logo. You can click on that. Or you can call us here at the station, 317-870-8400. 317-870-8400. Or online at catholicradioindy.org.
So we have some interesting topics to talk about, but what's kind of interesting is that there are two really large topics, science and morality. And these
you can't mix them.
you can mix them. But what we're going to be talking about today is science and morality from a Catholic perspective. And we have two guests to share their deep knowledge on these topics. Paul Giesting, did I say it right?
Yes.
Paul Giesting and Bill Schmidt. They are podcast hosts of That's So Second Millennium. So welcome to Faith in Action, guys.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah.
So, the Catholic Church has kind of gotten a bad rap when it comes to science, and without getting into Galileo, which you probably could, does the Church deserve kind of the bad rap that it gets with regard to science? And I think there's a lot of things that are misunderstood with that. But what is the Church's position on science? Is science good or bad?
The Catholic Church is 100% in favor of science. Science is, it grew out of Catholic thought in the Middle Ages. You know, there is an enormous wealth there. You know, going back to Thomas Aquinas' teacher was a guy named Albert the Great. His feast day is on November 15th. And he is the patron saint of natural scientists. He lived in the 1200s. And he was working at a time when people were, they were bringing, Greek philosophy back, looking at it and seeing how it could work with Christian teachings. And as it turns out, it can work very, very well if you do the necessary work. And at that time, people were starting to become interested in the questions. Nothing happens in a vacuum. So mm-hmm. we think of Galileo. Galileo was doing most of his work in the 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
He was building off of work that was done in the 1400s and 1500s by Copernicus and other people. And they themselves were already building off of work that had been done before that. Isaac Newton has the saying, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. So Newton himself, who is a giant, but where he was coming from people who had come before.
So, Bill, did you want to add anything to that in terms of the Church's position on science? Obviously, the Church supports science. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. There's a great compatibility. Without faith in a creator who has kind of gifted us with an understandable, orderly, and not random universe, science wouldn't really mean much at all. And so to me and to Paul, and I think to all of the folks that we've had the privilege of interviewing on our podcast, they start off seeing not only a compatibility, but almost a reliance one upon the other.
Well, I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about each of you. We're talking with Paul Giesting and Bill Schmidt. They are podcast hosts of a new podcast called That's So Second Millennium. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Paul, let's start with you.
Well, I'm a geologist. I've done research, I've done consulting, I've done a little work for the state of Indiana. I have a PhD from Notre Dame, got that back in 2006. So I study minerals and crystals, that was what I focused on. But, you know, my interests are just pretty broad. And I had a experience when I was 14, that was a while back, of really starting to, I mean, I was kind of a smart kid. Mm-hmm. I was always in danger of becoming a PhD. So it was very important to me that this book called The Bible, and this, I have this little pop-up book of the universe someone gave me in the late 80s that, like, it's sort of encapsulates for me the whole science as I thought of it when I was a kid. And it's like, well, these books don't tell the same story, and that's a problem for me. And I actually brought up the whole question of the people in the Middle Ages bringing their science and their philosophy together, because I read about that at that time. I actually read about it, in the context of literature as well. And it just, like, I just, from that moment on, realized, oh, we could do this again. I don't know if we're doing enough work on doing it again. We should do more work on doing it again. So that's where this podcast kind of came from my perspective.
And Bill, what about you? Give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I bring a little bit different background to the party. I was a journalist, and still am kind of an independent journalist, writing for the diocesan paper in the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, for instance. But you might say, as a journalist, I was in danger of becoming a pundit. And that's even more dangerous than a PhD, I think. But in any event, I covered science. I was a senior editor of Chemical Week magazine, et cetera. But then as a second half of life career, our family moved to South Bend, Indiana, so I could do marketing communications for the University of Notre Dame. We still happily live in South Bend. And Paul and I met on communications staff, and him as a PhD candidate. And we found that we had a lot in common, both on the science front and in our Catholic faith.
Tell us a little bit about the name of your blog.
Podcast.
I'm sorry. Podcast. You see how technically savvy I am.
Well, maybe you do have a blog as well, but I know you got a podcast. That's So Second Millennium. Where'd that come up? How'd you come up with that?
Oh, it was my idea, and Bill didn't talk me out of it. So when you talk about, when you go back again to that history that I mentioned to start with, that's a broad sweep, the entire second millennium of Christ, since the coming of Christ. And you think about the crisis of the church was in 1,000 years ago, which we don't very often, but really, actually Bishop Barron just put out a little book about, to the suffering church, and he mentions this. This is one of the points that he makes seriously. So 1,000 years ago, the church was in probably at least as much trouble as it is now. And in some of the same ways, which is really dreadful. But this was, so there's been that growth because the church came out of that and mm-hmm. produced this, intellectual golden age that led to science as we know it. But then we've spent the last half of the millennium kind of trying to destroy that very thing. So it's a play on words. It plays on both of those things, both that great growth and the possibilities that we still have, as well as don't be stuck in the second millennium with our friends, the new atheists, whose arguments are really, they are themselves stuck in the second millennium, and that's not where we should be.
So, Bill, go ahead.
I was going to say that there is a risk of everybody becoming stuck in the second millennium, or at least us baby boomers and folks other than perhaps the millennials, because we all learned what we know about, or what we think we know about, religion and science during the 20th century, and so we're kind of stuck there. A lot of us have not gotten updates on our information in either field, and we're relying completely on those sources of information, when in fact both theology, religion, and the world that religion helps us to comprehend, and certainly science, have marched forward at a rapid pace in the third millennium. And so we all have to stay updated.
So let me ask you, what would be the primary differences, or what are the things that we need to be thinking about in the third millennium that bring us up to date with regard to these two topics? I mean, that's a big question, but do you have maybe a couple points that you'd like to make in that regard of where should we be looking at, or how should we be viewing God, morality, and science in a new way that really does bring us closer to Christ? I know I just sprung that question on you.
No, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give you some time to think about it if you want to.
I mean, I have a way to start on that. Do you have anything you had off the top of your head, Bill?
No.
Please. Okay. Well, you know, so specifically, I think a lot of us are stuck in the 1890s. So that was, you know, the end of Newtonian physics. So we thought that there was a rule, and if we just knew where every particle was in the universe and how fast it was moving and in what direction, we would know the entire future. We would also know the entire past. We would know everything. And there's nothing, there's no room for God to act in that universe.
Okay.
That was people's really outlook on things. And the thing about
everything
is fixed. Okay. You know, the universe is running according to its laws, and there's nothing anything can do about that, and it must have just always existed, always according to these laws, which is itself not philosophically adequate, but it was really, it was still very enticing to people at that time. The problem is that the physics we discovered in the 20th century sort of blows that up. Relativity to some extent, but really quantum physics. And we still don't understand quantum physics, and the best people in the field will readily admit to you that we still don't understand quantum physics. We don't have an adequate philosophy for how it works. But there is room as big as a dump truck for God to do all kinds of things that we could never causally, you know, go back and do an experiment and say, oh, this is where God acted, and this was breaking a law. There's uncertainty. Mm-hmm. We've heard of the uncertainty principle.
Mm-hmm.
Very broadly speaking, that, you know, that gives God the room to do whatever, you know, not whatever he wants, because after all, God must like laws, otherwise he wouldn't have written as many as he has. He wouldn't have put as much order in the universe that gives us the ability to do science. But he does have, he's got it very, very carefully laid out, where he can do what he needs to do in order to communicate with us without breaking any of these laws that he's written. That's rather fascinating.
I want to mention something that I got an email from Paul saying he wanted me to mention something about the Society of Catholic Scientists Conference. What's the connection? Did you get some guests from there, or how did you, what's the connection with that, or what is that organization?
Bill, you introduced me to that. Do you want to start that off?
Well, as a non-scientist, but someone who's covered science, I was absolutely delighted to learn about the Society for Catholic Scientists, which is really only about 3 years old and now has 1,000 members
at least,
and is going international. And it's a group of scientists from all the different scientific fields who meet once a year and stay in touch, I guess, ongoingly, to share how the Catholic faith is informing their studies, but also to kind of find, let's say, a bit of solace in the fact that in many cases the work that they do or the environments that they're in academically, etc., often are not particularly affirming to their faith. And so when they have a conference like they just did at Notre Dame a couple of months ago, and Paul and I did have a chance to do podcast interviews with a lot of the speakers, it's like a wonderland for them and for us.
Yes.
Because
they finally get
to talk about both science and religion in the same breath and in the same sessions. And they love it. And then we loved it in return.
That's really interesting. I had never heard of that organization. So when I got that email from Paul mentioning, let's mention that, I thought, wow, that's really fascinating. Well, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about science and morality with two resident experts. Stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
An interview with Father Trenton Rauch and his story on how Catholic radio influenced his vocation.
I was not struck by lightning and knocked off my horse. I had a lot of time driving in the car listening to the radio, and I just got to a point where I would prefer to listen to something that would be intellectually stimulating. And at the same time, I was learning about the faith, particularly the apologetics.
Catholic Radio, building faith, building vocations. Where do you go for reliable information on what's happening in the world? Where can you turn for rock-solid teaching backed by centuries of unchanging, undeniable truth? Look first to the Catholic Church, and then be sure to tune in right here to Catholic Radio Indy. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Jim Ganley's in the studio as well as two of our guests. We've got one guest via phone, Bill Schmidt, and we've got Paul Giesting, who is in the studio with us, and they are the hosts or co-hosts of That's So Second Millennium. And I want to talk about, what is science? I mean, science is really just like a process, right?
Yeah. It means knowing in Latin. It just means stuff that we know.
And does it point us to God? I mean, that's kind of like, from my perspective, I always feel like God is the source of it all.
Yeah.
And so in some way, does it point us to God, or is that not necessarily the case?
I like what Bill said earlier that, I mean, it's at least important to notice that science as we know it arose in a Christian context. It had the chance, so far as we can tell, to arise in China or India or other centers of civilization, but it happened to arise in Christian Europe. So there can't be anything in conflict between them. And it's strongly suggestive that maybe there is something, you know, an intrinsic connection that we can know more about the Creator by studying His creation.
Okay. And what about, I've heard there's this thing, kind of maybe a movement to be like politically driven science where, you know, let's say we have abortion or bioethics and things that really are, you know, pointing to objective truth, like there is a human being growing in a person who is pregnant, you know, that we can't say that that's not life, but it seems like there are, I guess, ideologically driven science going on, this movement. Is that something that you're aware of, or that you're, is that a fair statement? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Let's see if we can, I think we need to take another couple sentences to unpack the question, what is science, before we tackle that.
Okay.
Science depends on at least these two things, our ability to communicate with each other. So it's not really a surprise that science didn't take off until after the printing press was invented.
Okay.
That's clearly probably key. But it also requires our ability to criticize our own ideas. So the idea of ideologically driven science, it's been around forever. I mean, it's been around as long as there's been science. So it's not a new thing.
Okay.
We've always had this, even when there was very little at stake, we'll get tied up in our own ideas. So I'm a geologist, you know, I'm far away from most political controversies, but people will get hung up on what name to call a mineral. I mean, there will be flame wars online. Just letting you know, don't call titanite sphene or sphene titanite in front of the wrong people. You'll get crucified. But people, you know, so the specific things you mentioned about, so we had our guest Maureen Kondik on. She's a famous bioethicist. She really went to bat and took some bullets for the pro-life movement in terms of going out with, as someone with, you know, top-of-the-line credentials in terms of, she knows embryos. She knows how embryos develop. She's a world-class expert in that. And, you know, insisting that people recognize this is what's actually going on. Because, unfortunately, over the last few centuries, philosophy has really kind of gone into the ground. And we've kind of, we've really gotten separated from that. And we need good philosophy to do really, really good science. It's amazing we do as well as we can. We do as well as we do without it. Recognizing when things need a different name.
And philosophy is basically the study of what is truth. Is that fair?
It's an attempt to, it's depends on how you define it.
Sure, but is that what you're saying, though?
Yeah, it's trying to get your thoughts straight. It's trying to be logically consistent. I mean, this is one way of looking at it. It's trying to make sure that you know what your terms mean. That's certainly one of the better things we've gotten out of modern philosophy, is a focus on our language and the words that we use and how they shape how we think. So in the cases you were talking about, there's the ability, if you're shoddy about, you know, calling, you know, the names you use for things, and you allow them to. So we've redefined, for example, what pregnancy is, what fertilization is, what conception is. You know,
it's like a slippery slope, but it should all be consistent. You know,
a pregnancy doesn't start until implantation. Well, that's nice and convenient. It makes it sound like we're not doing the same things that we are. You know, when clearly there is a new cell at the beginning of. You know, this would be, if you're really interested in that that line of evidence. You know, Maureen Kondik has some great books, and we would definitely recommend you listen to those episodes of the podcast.
So tell us, how do you get your guests, and who are your typical guests? I mean, what are the topics that you cover? Because science and morality are pretty big categories. What are some of the guests that you've had, and how do you go about getting your guests? You mentioned Maureen Condit?
Maureen Condic, yeah, C-O-N-D-I-C.
Okay.
She was one of a group. We interviewed most of the speakers at the Society of Catholic Scientists Conference. Its topic was, what does it mean to be human? And so we talked a lot about these bioethics issues with different people, and her in particular. She was being awarded the St. Albert Award for, you know, that the Society of Catholic Scientists has started handing out to great Catholic scientists like her. So she talked about that in her speech, which is available online. You can go to the Society of Catholic Scientists website and actually listen to her address. So we interviewed those speakers, and we've also reached out to, you know, some surprising people have said yes. So we talked to Guy Consolmagno at the Vatican Observatory. So he is a fascinating guy.
What did he talk about?
You know, he talked about planetary science. That's what he does. He's a meteorite and planetary guy. And so I've taught planetary science in the past. We talked a little bit about education and that sort of thing. So we've talked to Bill. Bill has been on the phone with Father Spitzer. That was a great episode.
You know, Father Bob Spitzer from Father Robert Spitzer's Universe on EWTN.
Yeah.
TV. I've been privileged to be a friend of his since the 80s. And, he's just a leader in fighting this battle to make sure that teachers and others, parents, everyone, can evangelize the youth to make sure that they don't slip away into exclusively scientific or scientistic thinking, which can deter a lot of kids away from, believing in the credibility of religious thought or faith-informed thought.
Yeah, so maybe you can talk a little bit more about that, Bill, that I guess what you're saying is that science, you don't want science to lead people away from God, but you want them to use science possibly to point them to God. I mean,
absolutely.
And so how do you do that? Like, as parents may be listening, or, I mean, what are the overlaps? And well, you can pick any area that you want.
Well, that's interesting because at Notre Dame, I do a lot of writing for the McGrath Institute for Church Life,
mm-hmm.
which has a great award-winning program called the Science and Religion Initiative, where they go around the country and then teachers come to them from around the country, Catholic high school teachers, to examine just this issue. How can they change their own syllabi and the whole school's curriculum to not silo it so much into students can so easily think that, well, the science class is completely separate from this religion class. They're two completely different things, and the science one seems so much more believable because it deals with what I can see, et cetera.
Tangible,
and,
yep.
It's what's tangible, what's measurable, and what's experienceable. And everybody is, in this relativistic age, more inclined to say, well, my experience, my interpretation is what rules. In the absence of God, we're tempted to make ourselves our own gods. And so that's the kind of interview, like Father Spitzer, and then we interviewed Chris Baglow, the director of the Science and Religion Initiative. There's a lot of great work being done to nip this in the bud, because that's a big factor in what's leading to this phenomenon called the nuns, you know, not affiliated with any religion.
Yep.
I mean, if you're giving advice to parents, I think the single best thing is to get educated yourself. And honestly, a great place to start would be Chris Baglow's own book, because he's got a textbook that he uses to talk to teenagers. But frankly, a lot of us could stand to to update our own awareness of these things.
So we only have about 3 minutes left, but tell us what you hope people get from the podcast initiative that you guys are involved in. What do you hope people take away from that? And then I would like you to give the podcast, and maybe how many podcasts you have up there already.
I mean, the main thing I hope for out of the podcast is for us to just get comfortable with the fact that science and religion, and the Catholic faith at any rate, are completely compatible. And people live their lives with both of these being prominent parts of their lives. They are not things that are or ought to be in opposition. They are completely, completely compatible. You could go and, I mean, it would be great to, if you wanted another document to read, to go back and look at what John Paul II said about Galileo. We, alluded to at the beginning, because, I mean, he was very clear and very, forceful about that episode. Was a problematic episode at that particular period in the history of the church and the cardinals, influencing the Pope to put out the pronouncements that he did, do not define the church's relationship with religion.
That's well said. And Bill, what about you? Well, what do you hope people to get from?
My hope is to just continue encouraging people to have a real hunger for knowledge, and to keep updating their knowledge, and also to keep having conversations with each other, which I think are so endangered today for all sorts of reasons. And perhaps one of the most important conversations that we can encourage is between science and religion. We've got them kind of contained in our own little convenient boxes of understanding, but there's so much there to savor and to connect.
And if you could, Paul, why don't you go ahead and give the web address for the podcast, how to get connected to listen to the podcast?
Well, the podcast is on all the major services under the name That's So Second Millennium. As long as you get the proper number of N's in Millennium, you're probably good to go. And it's on Apple, it's on Google Play, it's on Stitcher, we host it on Podbean. And we also have a website, www.thatssosecondmillennium, all spelled out, .net. If you stick it in Google, there's only so many things that will come up.
And how many podcasts do you have up about there? How many shows?
What are we up to, Bill? We're gonna release episode 74 is going to come out on Monday of when we're recording this. So it'll be more when it airs.
All right. So you've heard it here. That's So Second Millennium podcast hosts, Paul Geisting and Bill Schmidt. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Thanks. We appreciate you having us.
God bless.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again, or any past episode, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400. Or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.